I teach also Delta Blues guitar lessons if you're interested.
Got anything to plug, John?
That's John's plug.
Check me out at the Skate Gut Lounge, 56 Walker Street, AustinJM1999@yahoo.com.
Lenny, I thank you a whole lot.
Thank you, sir.
Maria, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And John, Austin John, as always.
As always, Fred, you and me.
Deep gratitude to Maria Alfonso, Lenny Molotov, Austin John Marshall. Also to One-Handed Molly, who will be back next week, along with Gavin Parker and Dr. Joseph C. Hoff, Jr. I'm Frederick Geobold. We do this Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on 99.5 FM, commercial-free WBAI, Pacifica Radio in New York City. Listen to a light show.
Hi, I'm Harry Belafonte. In my home, I have three radios. A tiny one in the kitchen. I keep one in the bathroom when I'm shaving or brushing my teeth or doing my toiletries so that I don't miss anything. And then, of course, in the main room where the family gathers around the set to watch the news and to get information. In our home, each one of those radio stations, through the automatic button that they have, WBAI, is programmed. And it's programmed because everybody in my family listens to it because it's informative, it's inspiring, it's instructive, and it's one of those stations that gives it to you the way you deserve to have it. I don't always agree with everything I hear on WBAI, but that's what makes it so fascinating. If I agreed with everything everybody on the station said, perhaps I'd have an indifference. But I hear opinions, I hear points of view that challenges my own set ways, challenges my own thoughts, helps me grow, or sometimes it just reaffirms what I believe and what I think. And I think that no station exists in America that does for its citizens what WBAI does. Let's not lose this station. Let us be diligent. Let us not be indifferent. Let us make sure we commit ourselves to having this voice of freedom constantly available to all of us. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Harry Belafonte. You are tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. This is a commercial-free radio station, a listener-sponsored radio station, and if you'd like to make a contribution to this station, to keep the station on the air, to keep the programming that you hear on a regular basis on these airwaves the way it is, please do so by sending a check to the Pacifica Foundation at WBAI Radio, Church Street Station, Post Office Box 11445, New York, New York, 10277. It's 87 degrees at 3 minutes past the hour of 3 o'clock. Usually, you'd be listening to Talkback with Hugh Hamilton, but part of the overall settlement and mandate by Pacifica, we will be engaging in a discussion of the Pacifica bylaws, of the revision of the Pacifica bylaws, and we have members of the committee and listeners here in the studio, and I do believe they will be engaging you on the telephones later on in this two-hour time slot. Again, Hugh Hamilton with Talkback will be returning tomorrow at 3 p.m. from 3 until 5, and 2 hours each and every week throughout this process, throughout times, different times of the day, you will be hearing from the members of the committee discussing revisions in the Pacifica bylaws and so on, those that are that govern WBAI as well as the other sister stations. So we'll turn it over to these good folks here in the studio. Anthony McCall, I know, is here. Ray LaForest is here, and a couple of other individuals that I know and don't know, but I'm sure by the end of this 2 hours I will know them very well. also. It's 304 in New York City, 99.5 FM. If you're just tuning in, so glad that you could join us for this. This is rather unprecedented. I've never participated and been aware of this taking place before, so it should be very, very interesting, and we encourage you to keep your dial right where it is at 99.5 FM WBAI, and join us on the web at WBAI.org. I say join us on the web, and I know that you are doing that. As a matter of fact, you are sitting there either typing away or recording each and every scintilla of information that comes your way. Good for you. Stay tuned.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, it's just like the river I've been running ever since. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know change don't come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid.
Good afternoon. You are about to hear a discussion of the Pacifica bylaws revision process by a group of listeners, and one of us is a lab member, and we are also awaiting the arrival of Ray LaForest, who is a member of the Pacifica National Board. As I understand, Ray was having a little parking difficulty downstairs. My name is Paul Surivel. I'm coordinator of the WBAI membership campaign, which is an outreach program, and I've also been active in the WBAI bylaws revision committee. In the studio here at the moment, we have Anthony McCall.
Hi, how are you?
Anthony is a lab member, and when I think of Anthony, the first thing I think about is the January National Board meeting in New York, and I was sitting in the audience, and I saw Anthony walking very determinedly toward the podium with a document in his hand, which turned out to be the WBAI resolution, which was the document that was approved by the board and ultimately led to the return of all the fired and banned back to WBAI. And as Anthony was passing me, I heard him say with tremendous amount of determination, "We've got some business to do," and he certainly did. Sitting next to Anthony is Eve Moser. Eve is a very active member of the WBAI Bylaws Revision Committee. Eve, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hello. Good afternoon.
To Eve's right is Dacio Quintana.
Hi, this is Dacio, an active listener.
Dacio is a very active outreach worker. You can see him on street corners around New York City on the weekends, passing out flyers, encouraging people to listen to WBAI. And we actually have just been joined by our fearless leader, Ray LaForest.
Hi, well, we're all leaders in this fight, aren't we? I don't know what stage you're at.
We're just doing introductions, Ray. You can
okay.
Take it from here.
All right. Well, this is a special hour indeed, 2 hours, and we hope you enjoy it. We hope you learn a lot from it, that you participate, and that if you have not been part of this process, that you indeed get motivated enough to do so. This is a very important process that has ramification into the future of this system. I'm not talking about just WBAI, but certainly the whole network. It impacts on the outreach that we're doing to have elections that will be truly representative of, at the very minimum, local advisory board members, and on the whole tenor of issues that relate to the ownership of this station by the listeners. We know how close we've been to disaster, to the precipice, and one of the main reasons for this happening is that many of us were not informed, were not connected to the system, and by the time it took us the struggle built enough to enough strength to wrestle control from those who had very different visions for, I believe, everybody sitting here, certainly, we were pretty close to losing, and we're still paying the price tremendously. The former leadership has left us with more than $5 million in debt, chaos on administrative level, on the political level. So the task of rebuilding is indeed a daunting, a challenging, and certainly a worthwhile one. Part of this process involves the reconstruction of the institution, and one of the ways to begin that is the so-called revising all the bylaws. If you want, this is something similar to the constitutions and the Bill of Rights of this country. This is what defines the relationship between the listeners and the local advisory board. Local advisory board, let's say, as representative of the listeners, with the local station management, the national board, and, of course, the relation between the local advisory board and the national body. And there are many other questions as we move to elect people as to who can vote, who can run for office, under what conditions. This is what we're going to touch on today. So briefly, what I'd like to do is go back to how we got here as a result of the settlement that I mentioned. An arrangement was made through the services of a judge because there was a feeling on the part of many people that as the situation in Pacifica Network was veering out of control, that laws were being violated, that the bylaws of this institution were being distorted. And so there were a prong response. One of them was a legal one. There was a lawsuit brought on representing listeners, brought on by Carol Spooner and others. There was a lawsuit brought on by the local advisory board members, members of the local advisory boards across the system, and later a so-called director lawsuit which involved members of the national board, and there was even another, an additional one. Part of the settlement was to set up a system where, well, I'll say very quickly, I think it's worth saying that it was not just a battle between two different positions. We believe that our position was a correct one. Our position is the one that says that the right to discuss issues pertaining to Pacifica, pertaining to BAI, is an inane right. This is a sort of a power. So that a gag rule, no matter what you call it, it is an inherent action of that serves to weaken not only the participation of listeners and producers, but weakens all of us. Another action clearly was unbridled spending of resources that which we're trying to reverse, which we've done a remarkable job doing, clearly with the tremendous support and response from the listeners. All this struggle, political, there was a so-called Pacifica campaign which brought the fight to the very jobs and telephone of some of the people on the other side. And all these actions together resulted, as I said, in an agreement which took the formal, which formally is a settlement that was reached, whereas the so-called former majority, people who controlled the session, were allowed five positions on a new board. The so-called dissidents were representing mostly people now who really, for example, the three people who were on the national board from New York City, one of them is Leslie Kagan, the chair of the board. She was one of the dissidents. And each local advisory board was allowed one sit on that new board. So the conditions of functioning of this board are a little bit complex. I won't go into that. This is not the issue of this today. Let us just say that the voting is not just done by straight numerical order. There has to be a combination of a minimum of amount of votes from each area and so on. However, because of the lack of participation of some of the members on the so-called former majority side, we're able to get started very quickly, and we've done many progress, as I said, including many changes administratively, financially, theoretically. On a, if you look at the finances narrowly, we've reduced the debt to $1.3 million. That's if you don't include the actual expenses taking place, debts that are monies that are due for operational purposes right now. We're moving very strongly to execute the next step, at least in terms of today's discussion, of the settlement, which was the establishment by the new board of a bylaws revision committee nationwide, which is led by one of the national board members from California, from Berkeley, named Carol Spooner. And in New York, Janice K. Bryant, who you have heard on this air very often, and I are co-chairs of this committee. We've had many meetings, I believe at least seven of them. I have actual lists of the dates. Maybe if necessary, we can share that with you later. We also had, which is very important, I feel, I'm sure everybody here would agree with me, many discussions on the air, not all of them directly related to this committee, but a few of them done by independent producers. And we're hoping that in the future that will be the mode of operation rather than the exception. At this point, there's a meeting planned by the program director, Bernard White, between that is in the process of being arranged between by the program director, between hopefully the majority of producers on the station and Janice K and I, and maybe some other individuals from the local advisory board, I hope, to really impress upon the majority of these producers the need for discussions to take place on the air, so that you, the listeners, can be informed, so that we can reach the majority of the listeners, so you can be educated, you can have your point of view heard, and discussion can take place bilaterally, and we can all grow and learn. And as I said, when we actually do vote on the basis of knowledge rather than impressions, feelings, passions, at least misguided passions. So, as I said earlier, we've had a few shows before at this different time of the day. This is the first one that is taking place in the middle of the day. This is a good hour for us. Welcoming the people who listen to you, Hamilton, at this time, and we are very glad to share this time with you. We hope you find it worthwhile. There was a timeline set up by the Bylaw Revision Committee to get this process accomplished. Some of the limitations were set up by the settlement agreement itself. It dictated that within 12 months of the first meeting, which is a meeting, by the way, that took place in New York City around the 22nd of December, I believe, of last year, which means that we have 12 months to get election of the local advisory board set up and done with, which means that by December of this year, that should be done. And within the next 3 months, or maybe sooner, actually, although it looks like it wouldn't happen that much sooner because the process is very complex, there will also be elections of the national board itself. And I should say that within the process of bylaw revision, when it comes to actually deciding what the bylaws will be, the new bylaws will be, the local advisory board will have to vote, a majority of them, 3 out of 5 local advisory board will have to vote on any issue that has to do with election of the and conditions for elections and mode of electioning, both from the local advisory board and from the national board. Can we take a break? Okay. So we're just going to take a break, a short break for a second there, and we're coming right back to you. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Our special program today is a discussion of the Bylaws Revision Committee of WBAI. My name is Rayla Forrest. I'm both a member of the Local Advisory Board of New York of WBI, and I represent this Local Advisory Board on the National Board of Pacifica. As I was saying, this committee, this bylaws committee, is made up of two members of the National Board, namely Janice K. Bryant and I, and they are members of the Local Advisory Board who are actively involved. They're not here today, but the lab is represented by Anthony McCall also, I guess indirectly, although he's not here in that capacity. So the idea was to have a discussion started, have ideas exchanged. People were starting this discussion at different levels. Some people had been taking a look at elections and other procedures for a long time. Many people were very new at this. As a result of the struggle for BI and Pacifica and other issues, there was some level of suspicion that we had to resolve and be able to work together. But essentially, what was decided is that once we were past a level where each local listening area committee would initiate discussion, that they would compare notes, and that these discussions would involve, as I said, the board, the national board members, the local advisory members, and certainly the majority of the participants would be listeners, and this is indeed the reality. The process that was initially agreed to was changed recently, and simply because the process of writing bylaws is such a complex one that we realized it was very difficult for five different areas to discuss those issues, to make sure that everybody could participate and take that huge volume of material and actually put it in the form of actual bylaws. So about 2 months ago, the National Committee decided to revise that system and instead gathered information and used the service of an attorney, somebody who has experience in writing bylaws, and has that individual do so. So we are expecting to have, probably at the end of this week and maybe early next week, an addition, an update up to what we had recently, which was called a very simplified view of what the different issues were, which was called a so-called bullet points. And we already have an attorney who's been engaged to put this and any additional material that we deem essential into a format of formal bylaws. And as far as our decision, and it still remains, and by August 15, we should have formal bylaws, at least a draft of formal bylaws, ready and proposed to be submitted to first the five local advisory board, because they are the ones that have to decide on sections of it, and because of their role as representative of the public, and certainly for the public to discuss. And from there, we'll again take notes, have further discussion, and move again into revising, and hopefully move very quickly towards permanent bylaws. So this is where we are. As I said, we have discussions. We're going to have time for you, the listeners, to call and give your opinion, ask questions. I know that by having done it before, that people very often prefer to talk about programming, what they want on the air, rather than actually talking about bylaws. And believe me, this is a very important topic, and I'm asking you to try to be disciplined and resist the temptation to discuss other things and see if you can give your opinion and ask questions about the topic being discussed today. So we're moving along. We're going to have presentations of different views of what this process could look like, important sections of that process. The first presentation will be done by a long-time activist in this area, somebody who's been involved to a tremendous extent in recruiting efforts, outreaching efforts by this station, and certainly in many other areas. His name is Paul Sorovel. He represents, among other things, Concerned Friends of WBI in New Jersey. Paul?
Thanks, Ray. What I'd like to do is very briefly describe the experience at KPFA Berkeley, the Berkeley Pacifica Station, the experience there with local advisory board elections. At KPFA, there have already been two elections of the local advisory board. And as a matter of fact, the settlement itself requires that the KPFA elections model be the starting point of our discussion about developing bylaws for the Pacifica Foundation for the elections process. At KPFA, two elections have been held, the first one in the year 2000, the second one in the year 2001. In both cases, approximately 5,000 subscribers voted. The way that the elections were structured was essentially that all subscribers were sent ballots in the mail, and in addition to subscribers, people who volunteered at the station or volunteered doing work for the station were also eligible for a ballot. To be qualified as a volunteer, you would have to do 3 hours of work during the previous calendar year. So you had an election by approximately 5,000 members of KPFA. All of the existing lab members in the first election were given the option to be grandfathered, meaning they didn't have to run for election. They could remain in their seats for an additional year, or they could choose to run for the election. Subsequently, elections are held every year, and the term of office is 2 years. Now, there were a number of conditions surrounding the elections. One was that there had to be a specified number of on-air debates. During these debates, all candidates had to be present. There could be debates in the community, and similarly, in those situations, all candidates had to be invited to those debates. Essentially, almost anyone was eligible to run in the election. They only had to present a petition of 10 signatures of KPFA subscribers to become eligible, and then after that, they had to answer a questionnaire to express their ideas about the station and about why they felt they were qualified to serve on the lab. There's a breakdown in terms of the proportion of lab members who are elected by listeners and lab members elected by the staff. 14 lab members are elected by the listeners, 8 members are elected by the staff. And there's a requirement in the elections procedures that 50% of the candidates who will be seated as a result of the election must be people of color, and 50% of the candidates to be seated must be women. The voting method is described as a proportional voting method. Each ballot contains a list of preferences that the voter checks off. And then there's a formula that's applied at the end of the process through which the candidates are elected. The way the diversity requirements are applied is that after the process, if less than 50% of the elected candidates are people of color, or less than 50% are women, those candidates, those people of color or women receiving the most votes who were not elected, are moved ahead to establish the 50% requirement. And this happened in the first election at KPFA. The requirements were not exercised in the second election. Finally, there is a recall provision in which voters have the right to recall candidates who have been elected by submitting a petition of at least 15% of the number of votes cast in the last election. And then a recall election takes place. The recall election is valid if at least the number of people voting is at least 50% of the numbers of votes cast in the original election. And that pretty much sums up the structure of what happened at KPFA. Yeah.
I just came to my mind. This is Dacio, a listener. In New York as well as in L.A. or in California, we have so many listeners who are not members, who are not subscribers. Is there a provision that allows them to at least somehow voice their opinion in this model that you just read?
Well, there is a provision which allows volunteers to vote. So if someone is not a subscriber and if they find that it's a financial hardship to subscribe, they would have the option of contacting the station and offering to volunteer for 3 hours. Now, I would like to mention that in our discussions here in New York in the Bylaws Committee, there has been considerable sentiment for not precluding people from voting, people that have financial obstacles, and also people who might have difficulty in making the arrangements to volunteer at the station or volunteer on behalf of the station. My own view is that I think that we should make it possible for people to volunteer at their own convenience. For example, someone who contacts the station and says, I would like to vote, I can't afford to subscribe, I can't come down to the station to volunteer, but I am interested in voting. I think a person like that could be given the option of, for instance, receiving, say, a couple of hundred promotional flyers for WBAI and being asked to distribute those flyers in their apartment building or in their neighborhood and thereby fulfilling the requirements for volunteering. Now, if for some reason that's not possible and the person is truly interested in voting, then in my view, we should establish some kind of a system where a waiver could be provided and the person would be allowed to vote.
Yeah, I think we need to empower these listeners. Maybe somehow a process of registration at the station. People can just come up and register as a listener, unable to meet a financial obligation to the station. I think it's very important to not only a listener is many times seen as a passive listener, but we need to allow and open the doors for them to become more active and participate in this new process.
Well, what will actually transpire will depend on the draft that's issued. There will be a draft issued by Carol Spooner, and it will define who's allowed to vote. If people in New York or in other areas feel that this is too restrictive and they would prefer to go along with something as you've suggested, we still have time to make our opinions known and to express them both to the local advisory board, which will be one of the parties that must approve the final draft of the bylaws, as well as making those views known to the national board.
Yeah, in case you're wondering what's happening, you're listening to a special programming today. My name is Wella Forrest. I'm a member of the national board. And in that capacity, I'm co-chair of the WBAI Bylaws Revision Committee. We're doing very important work, as the name suggests, revising all the bylaws of the Pacifica Institution that have tremendous implication for the future and functioning of WBAI and all the other four sister stations. Today, since this is the first time that we're addressing you in this hour, the regular program has been preempted to allow us to talk to you today and have this presentation for you. With me today are three individuals who have struggled very hard to bring this bring us to victory, to reconquer the station and assist in rebuilding a whole new, more democratic, stronger, much more efficient system. And certainly WBAI right here. The presentation you just heard was by Paul Sorovel. And he talked about the KPFA model. KPFA is our sister station in Berkeley. And the reason why this presentation was vital is that in the settlement I mentioned earlier, this is the very model with which we're supposed to start our discussion, although we are not necessarily tied to any of the decisions made by KPFA. The next presentation will be done by Anthony McCall. Anthony McCall, as I said, is also I've been active for a long time on behalf of restoration of sanity to this air. He's been a member of the CPR, an organization of concern and involve listeners within the Afro-American community, a member of the local advisory board, and representing CPR on the so-called on the coordinating committee of the so-called Concern Front of the WBAI. And there are different visions as to how this very important process should be carried out. One of the key issues is how do you bring people into this process who have been disenfranchised, who don't necessarily trust the system the way it is now, however, whose voices are very important. One example that I like to use, discussing about the difficulty we're encountering here, is a very important activity, a demonstration organized in Seattle about 2 years ago, protesting globalization. This was a demonstration that was key, that where 50,000 people participated, the majority of whom happened to be white, Caucasian. They did their best. They sent thousands of emails. However, because of class issues, race issues, because of contacts that they were lacking, because it cost more than $500, let's say, to fly from New York to Seattle, because they didn't have people of color on their email, and because people of color, as a rule, have less access to the systems, the result was that in spite of goodwill, the participation of people of color and working people in general, poor people, was minimal. So we're facing the same difficulty. How do you... Is clean enough to just present the best program possible and throw it out there and hope that people will respond? We have to guarantee that some results are achieved, that the majority of the people implicated and that would benefit, that are essential for a dynamic, a progressive functioning of the WBI and Pacifica, be part of this process. So toward achieving this goal, Anthony is going to present his views on how this should work, and it was a system that I believe is called the
system of inclusion, and or sometimes discussed as the constituency approach to participation in WBAI and Pacifica.
Okay, Anthony.
Thank you, Ray. Paul, it was good to hear some of the points you were making. Let me just again thank those people who are listening, paying attention to some of this, because it's a process that in some cases can be rather tedious, but on the other hand, it's very important to those of us who recognize the importance of Pacifica in general, and certainly WBAI as one of the platforms for which our various communities engaged in struggle really are assisted. It's a portal at a time when there are not enough places in which those who are oppressed, those who have to resist the exploitation and the political discrimination that occurs on a day-to-day basis. This is so important an issue that as WBAI and Pacifica go forward, it's critical that more of the voices of those whom are oppressed, those who are engaged in that struggle, are involved in the process of determining the policies of governance. Just simply put, more of those people who are under attack, who consistently must find a way to be self-determining, who are struggling to improve their economic and social conditions within this country and indeed in the world, must be able to have much more of a say in that network and station that purports and has demonstrated to be one of its strongest supporters and platforms. In order to do this, we've proposed that a process that involves, in the first case, much more outreach, or as many of my colleagues point out, an inviting in, an inclusion of more of those communities that are often not represented at the table. We have proposed that communities such as the communities of color, organizations and groups that support the historic struggle of those people for self-determination would be an important element, not so much as representatives in a voting process, but as catalysts to help do the contact, the reaching into communities, if you will, to mobilize listeners who happen to be from various communities of color to be involved. In addition, we think that there are a number of other people in society and who are parts of the listening community, sectors of the listening community, who are daily engaged in trying to improve their lives but struggle against chauvinist and discriminatory policies. People such as those who are disabled, young people, people in prison, a number of groups. Women, of course, have been structurally made second-class citizens, not only in the U.S., but throughout most of the world. In addition to that, we feel that the artists and cultural worker community, as well as a number of the people who have social and sexual orientations that are not considered a part of the ruling mainstream, those who are gay and lesbian and transgender and bisexual persons, we feel that their voice must be heard. And by a mobilization of these various people who are consistently engaged in struggle for progressive change, who are part of what is the transformative and liberating mission of Pacifica, those people who are opposed to war, who are anti-racist, we figure that the communities from which most of the struggles that are today identified as progressive, communities involving the immigrant population, people, be they Arab, Haitian, or many other communities, are engaged in important struggles for self-determination. These are the communities that we feel will most vigorously help transform even a very positive and forward-looking BAI and Pacifica into a new and more revolutionary BAI and Pacifica. So it's our proposal that a process that first seeks to mobilize these communities or groups, what are often called constituent groups, that mobilizes them to participate more fully in the day-to-day processes that are going on now with respect to governance, and also that mobilize them to participate in the elections that will be on the agenda within several months. I know that by the end of this calendar year, there are projections and proposals now as part of the court agreement that local board elections take place, and subsequently, within 3 months, national board elections of some sort take place. So what we are proposing is that the communities of listeners that represent all of these various interest groups actually at some point have candidates who are nominated from within these various communities and sectors to choose from, and that among these candidates, these communities, these constituent groups, be they the African ancestry community or the Latino community or the disabled persons community or youth and many of the others that I've mentioned, that the listener community vote for the nominees, the candidates from these various sectors. We think that it's not inconsistent with the work that was initially done in KPFA. We feel that they identified clearly constituents, they identified communities, people of color, they identified women, and they also identify, as many of us locally do, they identify the listeners as clearly one of our constituents here. So we seek not to eliminate any of those constituencies, but we do feel that organizing, mobilizing, and ultimately representation that brings those groups clearly into focus by the selection process of elections is quite strong. Now, there are a number of models being discussed in respect to this inclusion or constituency approach. Some of the models do propose that there be selection of the specific categories of people And there is the possibility that those parties be elected or selected. We, in general, in the Community for Progressive Radio, are still discussing this, and as we've indicated in some of the models that we've presented outlines for, we support, in general, an election process for all parties. However, we pointed out that, for instance, if the Native or Indigenous community, whom we think should definitely have representation and involvement in every aspect of Pacifica and BAI, if they happen to use a traditional process for selecting their representatives, that may include conferencing and a choice that is not so-called, according to our formal processes, an election. We would think that that within their is within their cultural rights and their ability to be self-determining to make that choice. However, in general, as I've said, we support a process that would be election-based. There's much more to say, and I'm sure a number of questions to answer. However, I think this is quite enough to start off with.
Thank you, Anthony. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. We are you're listening to a special programming activities of the WBAI Bylaws Revision Committee. Frederick Douglass said that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And if you want to be a grown-up and decide that you'll have an impact and control over your future, it does demand that you you pay minimum of attention and get involved and get educated. It's a process that's not as sexy sometimes as some of the other programming that we have, but we're trying to make it as interesting as possible, especially with your participation. So far you've had two presentations. The first one was for Paul Sarovell, and it was necessary to do that one. It was this is a presentation that's mandated. That was done as a result of the mandate by the of the settlement that we start with the KPFA model of election. As I said earlier, there are many issues to discuss. Election is certainly a very important one, and that's what we're dealing with today. There are different visions as to how to go about it. Anthony McCall talked about an inclusion constituency model. Now, there are people who don't necessarily disagree with these ideas, but who feel that in the process of achieving it in such a way, that the higher principle of democracy and of true representation might be violated. These views, and I should say that if for each model, there are variations of views, sometimes into major subsections of those models, into how it should be implemented exactly. And that's what we're struggling with, to be as clear, as informed as possible. We have a limitation of time. As I said earlier, we're supposed to, the local advisory board should be elected by December 22nd, and experience has told us that it takes 3 months for these elections to take place. So we're talking about this process being ready and to move no later than late September of this year. We're working as hard as we can, and we need your participation to have your ideas, to make this a truly democratic process, and to have your energy and your inspiration. And we hope that this show today will be part of this motivation for you to get involved. Later during the program, we'll give you phone numbers, email, website for you to contact us and engage us in that process. As I said, the next presentation is an important one. It deals with a view of the election process that is based on, I guess you could say, on a one man, one vote, to paraphrase. And if I'm not quite accurate, I'm sure Yves Moser, who's the next presenter, will correct me. Yves also has been very active through the work of the election committee of the concerned friends of WBAI, and she's here with us to share experience. Yves?
Yeah, well, it's funny that you said one man, one vote, because I was kind of just getting to that. I just wanted to perhaps present to say that my emphasis is different, but I think not really opposing to what Anthony is talking about. Because as I'm listening to him, I'm thinking to myself, and I'm speaking in my own words, but I, to some extent, I represent the Elections Committee and or that point of view, not the elections committee, but that point of view, which is basically, I think, that we are emphasizing, we emphasize in our thinking that we want all the constituencies that Anthony is talking about to be included, of course, that really almost goes without saying. I think our emphasis is that all of us should have the most direct democracy possible with respect to our relationship as members of the station community to the national board and to the local board and to the station. And I just would like to give my own definition of members of the station community, because there's an this is a little bit of a parenthesis, but there's an unfortunate dichotomy split here and misunderstanding because of the term listener. It's listeners who we think of, it's the listeners who give the contributions. But and then there's this pitting listeners versus people who work at the station. I think, to me, that's very sad, and it's just plain wrong. And I personally would define as members anybody in a signal area who contributes money, and if you want to extend that to also to volunteer, that's another question, but at a minimum, anyone who contributes whatever minimum of money per year is established, let's say some multiple of the minimum wage, and that so that automatically, by definition, includes people who work at the station, people who are paid to work at the station, people who work at the station without getting paid, as well as people who have never set foot in the radio station and will never and may never do so. So I would like to see, to me, that means the station community. And I wish that people would think of it that way, and I wish we could come up with a better term so that when we use the term listener supporters or listener members, we know that, in fact, we are not limiting ourselves to only those people. That also includes, by definition, in my view, those same people who are already members of the boards, and those people who will be elected to boards. Because one of the points of view that I have and is agreed to by many other people is that the boards should be elected only by the members of the station communities and by nobody else, and that they should only be seated by election and not by appointment. And so this is a little bit of what I'm talking about by direct democracy.
Are you finished?
Well, I'm waiting for questions.
Okay. Well, we're doing something unusual today. We have with us a brother who, in a way, represents you, the listener. His name is Dacio Quintana. So what we had in mind, we've never done this before, is that we would allow him to ask questions after each presentation if he was confused about something, if he strongly objected to something. And in previous shows, we've tried different models. For example, in the past, we had representative of of different areas. We had shows where we had people from New Jersey, Westchester County, Rockland, Long Island. So the idea is to be as inclusive as possible and touch to different aspects of this constituency. Dacio, do you have any question?
Maybe it's not strictly related to the talk, but maybe I'm jumping up a little ahead. As listeners, we want to see what's the road ahead. And my question concerns the LAM members, the role of the LAM members of this WBAI signal area. Is the role an advisory role? Or is a role more of a shared decision-making, which is, I just came to my head about this as I go along. What do you think about that?
Well, maybe I can answer that, being a member of the LAB myself. The LAB has, the way the bylaws are presently written, the LAB has an advisory role, and that was part of the tremendous fight that pitted us against people on the other side of the struggle that's still progressing in a way. And the last board had passed resolution that actually reduced the role of the LAB further, prevented local advisory board members from being chosen to sit on the national board. However, this is the direction very clearly right now is to have more power in the hand of the lab, and certainly both for political reason and if for the reason because of the settlement agreement that this new body will be.